That was the dulcet tones of producer Dan's mechanical Hanukkah doing its thing and possibly needing some TLC. I am Rabbi Debbie Young-Summers. It's lovely to be with you, and it's really lovely to be joined, as always, by my wonderful colleagues, Rabbi Robin Ashwestein and Rabbi Miriam Berger. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Happy Hanukkah almost.
Got me in the mood with the matzah.
Yeah, it's great. I loved it.
You kind of want to sing along, and then you know you're not going to be quite as flat.
Blankety.
In the right moments.
I feel the right xylophone could create the beautiful accompaniment.
I'm wondering if Dan's going to appear to defend his Hanukkah. So for the benefit of all of you listening, the last time we were together, we were talking about what makes us angry. So as Hanukkah is coming, and Hanukkah is, of course, the festival of dedication. It means rededication. It's when we rededicated the temple, and perhaps it's a time to think about what it is that we want to rededicate ourselves to and be dedicated to. I think as rabbis, the answer to that question is probably different every week. But I'm wondering what Robin and Miriam are feeling dedicated to this week.
Well, I had a great morning today. I went to a meeting of lots of people across Manchester thinking about how to build power. And so when you asked this question, I immediately thought of that space and like the privilege it is to be a progressive rabbi in a region that really cares about empowering people, and the potential that we have as a community in Manchester to create real change, to connect with people across Greater Manchester and be a really loud, proud voice that's out there, that's proud of our Judaism and knows how to live it on the streets. So I think I'm going to rededicate myself to that mission of us being outward facing social justice and finding partners in doing that work. So thanks, because I feel re-energized now.
Yay.
I feel like I'm taking the other side of the rabbinic coin. While you're looking outwards, I feel like my last week has been really dedicated to looking inwards as part of the community, really. We are midway through a rebuilding project, and lots of our conversations are about the opening of the new building, when we're in the new building, the relocation back to the original site, all of those pieces, and lots of conversations about kind of the future of the community, lots of communities, lots of conversations with people as passionate as I am about Reform Judaism and wanting to strengthen the Reform movement at the moment, and really to see open the next chapter of Reform Judaism in this country. And I feel like there's the dulcet tones going on downstairs as we record. My son is in a guitar lesson putting together the running order of music that he wants to use for the service that we're co-leading on Friday the 24th of December, something other people might call Christmas Eve. And it just feels so, so special to be leading my first service with my little boy, who's not so little anymore. So all about the future, I think, dedicating myself to the future.
That is so exciting. Oh, so I think I'm sort of halfway between those two, and I've had one of those weeks where, as we do most of the time, I'm sort of leaping from one space to another really quickly, from, you know, funerals to wedding blessing conversations to a meeting yesterday where I was confirmed as a new trustee for a charity called Faiths for Climate Change. So no, that doesn't make any sense. You can edit that out. Faiths for the Climate. It's not Faiths for Climate Change. That would be crazy.
We're all going to world up.
Terrible, it's so, people.
It's so cold. We're going to warm the world.
So yesterday I became a trustee of a charity called Faiths for the Climate. And we had this really inspiring conversation about the need for recompense, really, to be given to the Global South, who are bearing the brunt of much of global warming, but also will be required to make huge sacrifices around fossil fuels and things when we've actually gone through that phase already and done all that. And the need to campaign for that recompense. And I'm feeling really dedicated and excited about the sort of climate change activism and how important it is, but also really excited that I've done it just on the eve of Hanukkah, because I think, looking to the inwards side of it, we often forget that there is a really beautiful environmental message in Hanukkah. You know, at Hanukkah, as the story goes, one day's oil was made to last for 8 days. If we can make one day's fuel or energy, or even our internal energies, actually, sometimes as rabbis, last for 8 days, you know, that's essentially the challenge of the future. Hanukkah is a lesson in the questions we need to ask ourselves for the future. We need to make our energy go further and use it more economically. And we unfortunately can't rely on miracles to make it happen. So yeah, dedicating ourselves to that fight at Hanukkah, I think is important. So how excited are we feeling about Hanukkah?
Well, we must be pretty excited, I think, for the benefit of those who are listening to the podcast rather than watching on YouTube. I think I need to explain that we're all in matching Hanukkah jumpers this week to get us in the Hanukkah spirit. So I think if we all just move back from the camera a little, we'll be able to reveal our gorgeous, very classy attire. They really are quite the look.
Ta-da!
Great. That's a good pause on audio. Yeah, they are worth it, though.
Very much worth it. Beautiful yeah. Hanukkah jumpers.
It's just one of my collection, I have to say. I have a few.
Great. There aren't that many here in Britain, though. In America, there's like, I've seen people with Hanukkah cardigans, you name it, they have it. So I feel a bit sad. This was the only one I could get on Amazon. I couldn't find anymore.
I went to Atlanta with Miriam, actually, just before the pandemic, really, in October,
it was
November.
December 19.
And I went to Target and ordered Hanukkah pajamas. So we have matching Hanukkah pajamas. I suspect my daughters don't fit her anymore. But for the rest of us, I think we're good.
But that's the thing, isn't it? About like the fact that we live in Britain and we would never, I have never been into a supermarket that had Hanukkah stuff. It all has Christmas stuff, which is what we're going to be kind of delving into. But like, I can't even imagine what that would feel like to see my little minority religion, like in Waitrose. I don't go to Waitrose. I don't know why I chose that. I'm trying to be posher than I am. Lidl or whatever. Now I'm getting in trouble with like the spectrum of supermarkets, but my local one is Lidl. But like, you know, you don't go in there and see Hanukkah stuff. It's not part of the culture, is it, in the same way? So it's really interesting in America. It's different.
So here's the challenge. Wouldn't it be more appropriate to see Rosh Hashanah stuff or even Shavuot stuff in our supermarkets rather than Hanukkah? Hanukkah isn't even in the Tanakh, right? We don't take time off work. And yet it has become the festival.
The number of people who've said to me this year, it really feels too early. It's just not the same when it's so early. And what they mean is it's not the same when it's not close enough to Christmas. But it's interesting, right? Because actually it's always pitched alongside Christmas and it doesn't quite work this early unless you just love it for its own sake.
It's funny because I'm just about to teach our conversion class on Hanukkah. And I think, Debbie, you put together the resources we use. And one of the points is, make sure participants understand it's not a Jewish Christmas. And I was like, is it not? It is. Like, in some ways it kind of is. And I was like, oh.
I don't know if that one was me or Eleanor Davis, or Eleanor, who's a student rabbi. I think it might have been a mixture. I think I started it and Eleanor finished it when I went on maternity leave.
Right. It's a great question though. Like, is it? Mm-hmm. But
So we know Miriam is going to be leading Friday night services on the 24th of December, and I think I might be too.
Although giving it to Francesca, my niece, is leading the morning of Christmas morning with Cantor Zoe Jacobs. So I don't want anyone to think I'm like taking the whole Christmas on myself.
So Miriam, are you taking Christmas Day off so that you can celebrate?
Well, now that is a good question. Am I working on Christmas Day? I'm not. Am I doing anything Christmassy? Dovka, I'm absolutely not. And actually, it being on Shabbat is really quite upsetting because the things I like to do to Dovka not do Christmas is difficult to do on Shabbat. So I always do a Dovka bagel run so that I always go to Daniel's Bagel Bakery in Temple Fortune on Christmas Day to do that, like, something special about today? Are the shops not open? I didn't notice because this shop is open and I'm just buying bagels because this is what we do on Christmas. And I can't do that on Shabbat. So I feel my Dovka, it's not Christmas stuff, is limited this year.
Did you see the really awful tweet this week that was doing the rounds? Some Greek Orthodox guy in Wales, of all places, tweeted that Jews eat bagels on Christmas to remind themselves of the hole that sits in the middle of their lives without Jesus.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, that went dark quick.
There's not much to unpack there.
Oh my goodness, I'm actually, as a Jew that eats a bagel on Christmas, there's no hole in my life. Yeah. It's all
and dough. Interestingly, of course, apparently bagels have actually become quite a Christmassy thing to eat now. This is going to upset Miriam a lot. Like, oh, bagel breakfast is quite a Christmas thing to do now,
no.
I'm told. Sorry.
Oh, that I find upsetting. But that's just their cultural appropriation rather than all, and I'm going to put you guys in this category as well, all you Jews who are appropriating their Christmas. So, you know, maybe we just need to learn to share better.
So how do you define cultural appropriation of Christmas, Miriam?
Well, I think it is summed up for me by the sign that my kosher butcher puts up every year, which offends me more than anything, which is always the date for when you have to have ordered your kosher Christmas turkey. So it will be like, you know, turkey orders have to be in by the 18th of December, whatever. No, how is there such a thing as a kosher Christmas turkey? As soon as you're eating turkey on 25th of December, it surely can't have a kashrut symbol.
Well, this year it can just be your Shabbos lunch.
There you go.
Except
we
the
just
25th.
Happen to be having turkey for Shabbat lunch.
I think
we have turkey sometimes.
Turkey is kosher 11 months of the year.
So, Robin, you're in a slightly different category here because you do have a non-Jewish dad, as we talked about last time.
Did I mention that?
Yeah. But I do think that makes a difference. Like, this is part of your family heritage.
Totally.
Yeah. What do you do for Christmas? Does your dad do anything? Does your family do anything?
Well, I don't know if I also mentioned that I'm vegan. So that plays into
it. So no turkey.
I'm like sitting with a lot of like, oh my gosh, in my body, because I do really enjoy Christmas Day. So producer Dan wanted us to have more heated debates, didn't he, on Rabbiting On? I think this might be it.
Definitely the heated.
This is it. We're going to go into it. So yes, we have a full Christmas. We do not go to church. We don't celebrate it religiously, and I would never try to, because I think that would be the step and the line of crossing over something that isn't mine. But Christmas has become so commercialized and part of the Western culture. So yes, my dad is not Jewish, so we do celebrate it under that pretense, and it certainly helps my all the kids in the family. They just go around going, well, we do Christmas because Brian is not Jewish, so it kind of gives us a cover. But saying that, my mum, who was from the East End, is from the East End, you know, a daughter of two families of like 18 kids or whatever it was, they celebrated Christmas in the East End. So it's not like we don't, yes, we say we do it because my dad's not Jewish, as I mentioned, but we also do it because it's actually just part of my mum has always celebrated it. Not in a huge way, but in presents, a family gathering. We love gatherings. We love food.
Do you have a tree and decorations?
So in my house, we don't, but we do go to my parents who have the tree, and we go and sit under it and open presents and a stocking. So we do, and I've shown you my Christmas hat beforehand. Like, I have a Christmas hat I wear because I love getting dressed up. I do it very Jewishly, which is like, I love getting dressed up. I love to like eat nice things and have rituals around it. And I don't know whether it's because I'm so comfortable in my Judaism that I'm fine doing it, and that it's interesting. Now I'm talking, I'm wondering how it's going to sound to people who really practice Christmas religiously. I'm getting all kind of like, oh, feel. I'd be love to have that conversation. But for me, it's not religious. It's a cultural thing.
So that piece.
But I think for lots of Christians, there is an understanding that this has become on some level a national day of eating and Christmas trees. So I kind of feel like I've been on a weird journey with all of this. I've been in different places at different times. When I was growing up, I think we got presents on Christmas Day till I was about 5. And then my parents were like, this is weird and confusing. We need to stop doing this. And it was only presents on Hanukkah. But we still had all the family over for lunch on Christmas Day. Or we went to my aunts or uncles because it was a day off and everyone was free and we like food. And my aunts are incredible cooks, really, particularly Auntie Nina of Swizzers, who makes the most amazing Christmas pudding that would be set on fire and brandy butter. It was just good food. But, we didn't have a tree, although I did ask for a tree quite a lot as a child. I really wanted a tree. And eventually Mum went into the garden and picked up a dead branch and sprayed it silver. And at Hanukkah hung Mug and David's and things on it. And I think we had that for about 4 years until I was like 10 or 11 and was like, no, this is silly. I'm being silly. So we don't have a tree. And then, as a young adult, I was like, well, why would I do anything about Christmas? I'm a religious Jew and I love Hanukkah and I love Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot. I don't need Christmas. And Gary and I, when we were first married, were very much of the Miriam school. No, we didn't acknowledge Christmas. We didn't do anything for Christmas. And then we got into food a lot and cooking and trying different things. And Gary really wanted to try temperature cooking in our smoker, a whole turkey. And you can't get a whole turkey that easily most of the year. But what became really funny was, I mean, it was literally just, it was about the food, right? It was about having a nice meal and everyone's off work. And we would cook anything that was like over the top and silly that we couldn't, you can't necessarily cook on Shabbat because it doesn't keep well on a hot plate or whatever it is that you're doing. Because we're that kind of Jew. And it got to the point where a few years ago, we weren't going to Limud. And Limud was actually often a way to avoid Christmas. I know lots of people that would go to Limud to avoid having to deal with it. But there was a year we weren't going to Limud, and which for those listeners who don't know is a huge Jewish learning conference over either Christmas or New Year or sometime in between. And Rabbi Natan Levy and his family weren't going to Limud that year either. He's an Orthodox rabbi. And we said to Natan, look, we like cooking. No one's doing anything. Why don't you come over for lunch? We're not going to do anything Christmassy, but we'll just have a nice lunch together. We'll cook Yorkshire puddings and roast potatoes and stuff that's yummy. And Natan was like, you will have crackers, won't you? Because I've never done any of that and I'd really like to. So we got crackers and did hats and silly things. And then my kids got obsessed with crackers. So I don't know that we'll do as much this year because it is Shabbat and we'll be doing Shabbat stuff. But when there's nothing else happening, it's like you drive into London and look at the lights, but what else is there to do? Would you look at the lights, Miriam, or is that too much Christmas?
So I like my lights at Kew, where it's they're lights and it's dark. And, you know, Kew Gardens.
So that's Hanukkah.
Kew Gardens do beautiful lights in the dark, which is, you know, totally happy to make that Hanukkah, Christmas or Diwali, depending on who's walking around the lights or of no faith. But there's just certain things like, you know, we don't have Santa wrapped chocolate. We don't have the things that feel like they're related to somebody, something else. You know, the way I liken it is if somebody said to me, I just love your festival of detox. I think everybody should take 25 hours out of their year where they just don't eat and they fast for the day and they think about, you know, being a better person. And, you know, well, actually I spend a fortune on colonic irrigation that day because, you know, it's all about the colonic irrigation. I've got this wonderful overpriced white outfit that I only ever wear on that day. I'd be like, you're stealing Yom Kippur. That's not what Yom Kippur is. Yom Kippur is all of these other things. That's what I feel about the power of brandy butter. That's my like, no, it's let them have their brandy butter. And, you know, we can have kosher turkey 11 other months of the year.
That's so interesting because I think the way I've described it to my kids when they've said, you know, why can't we have Santa and why can't we do this? And my answer is, well, you can go to someone else's birthday party, but you don't get the presents, right? You can appreciate someone else's celebration without it being your celebration. You know, you would eat the sandwiches at the birthday party, but not get 27 presents.
You wouldn't throw a birthday party in your house on the day of their school friend's birthday and not invite the friend whose birthday it is.
But what you're saying reminds me last year, I think it was last year or maybe the year before, I was on Three Counties Radio chatting about Hanukkah and the host said, you know, this is really, really lovely and I'm going to light a Hanukkah this year to spread light into the world. And live on air, I was trying to explain how inappropriate it would be for her to light a Hanukkah to spread light into the world when, you know, we have blessings and it's a rite of witnessing and da, da, da. And you're right. Like that is, and I often say with Pancake Day, for example, like what are people giving up for Lent? If all these Jews are eating pancakes, what are they giving up for Lent, right? You're taking the food bit and not the, but I feel like, so like there is a secular element because of the non-separation of church and state. There's become this secular element to Christmas that is a sort of no man's land. We really should have had a Christian guest to come and tell us how they feel about all this.
Right. Well, I think what one of the interesting things that I'm reflecting on is number one, the unique space that Christmas has, which is that it has become much bigger than the religious message. It, you know, it's kind of even more than Easter, you know, or it's a very particular festival. But also there's something about power, a majority and minority. Like, it would be completely inappropriate for Hanukkah to be appropriated in that way, because we're not the majority. We don't hold the power in that sense. Like, can you appropriate something that is the majority culture and power? I don't know. There's something about that that I'm playing with, of like being the kind of ethnic minority in Britain doing this.
That's
rather
really
than the other way around.
And I think that is part of how this has happened in a way, right? It is that power play that it was the norm. But a lot of my Christian friends today will say they are a religious minority, right? Lots of people are celebrating Christmas. Not so many are going to church, although, again, growing up, when we would quite often spend Christmas time in Spain for a number of years. We had an apartment we would go to, and my dad and I, Christmas morning, would go to church because my parents loved going to Spain over Christmas because it was very uncommercial. It was about the fact that this is a spiritual day. It's not about all the presents and, you know, the trees, and, you know, it was go to church and love one another and share things together. And we went as sort of appreciative neighbours, not because it was our worship, but to be part of experiencing what was going on. Whereas I think that tension of what it means to actually worship and celebrate Jesus on this day is lost in so much of what it's become about. And my Christian friends are equally frustrated by the commercialisation of Christmas, just as we are with Hanukkah, really.
As a teenager, when I was dating a Jewish boy, but whose stepmom was not Jewish, I loved going to midnight mass with them because I love a service. I love beautiful music. I love the awe of a religious moment. And, you know, as you say, there's something about sharing that experience, being there to heighten that experience for somebody who is Christian and is celebrating that. But there's something for me so ironic about the fact that it's Hanukkah that's juxtaposed with Christmas, and Hanukkah was put in place as a way of being able to say you're assimilating, you're taking on these practices that are around you. How can we make them Jewish, right? How can we give you this moment in the darkness? How can we give you this festival of light? But how can we give you a Jewish story and a Jewish message and a Jewish interpretation of this moment and these things you're celebrating already? So, like, I love my Hanukkah decorations that I bought in Target and other trips to America, because there's something about being able to say, I can make something Jewish. I can enhance my Judaism. I can say, oh, decorations, making your house feel the light, not just your Hanukkah. That's gorgeous over Hanukkah, but that's really different. Heightening Hanukkah is really different to taking on the 24th, 25th of December and being able to say, well, this is a bank holiday, this is a festival for me.
I saw the most beautiful Hanukkah wreath this week on Facebook. Rabbi Esther Hugenholtz, I don't know if you guys saw it, has created a Hanukkah wreath, which, and she's now based in Iowa in America, and I think wreaths are a very big thing. She's constructed this gorgeous wreath with incorporating her Sukkot lulav, dried slices of her etrog, as well as kind of little images of Hanukkiah and dreidels. And actually, it's a beautiful part of the story that's quite often missed, is that Hanukkah is 8 days long because the Maccabees, when they were fighting, had missed out on the Sukkot celebration. And this rededication became, oh, we've got to do Sukkot now. Let's do our 8 days of Sukkot sacrifices. And that was the sort of the original story that we had. The light story is a much later one that is that sense of how do we bring spirituality to this now there is no temple. And I loved the weaving in of the Sukkot motifs into something that was really trying to be enhancing the beauty of Hanukkah. I thought it was lovely.
Yeah. And I it's really interesting, and I liked hearing from Miriam about the heightening aspect, and Hanukkah wreaths are one way of doing it, but like that heightening. But I guess part, it makes me think about the intentionality of what we're doing. So part of, I get more stressed out, interestingly enough, about the commercialization of Hanukkah and the capitalist overtones of it. So when I was speaking to Gabriel, my son, the other day about the miracle of Hanukkah, we were recording something for radio, and he said, yes, it would be like the miracle of a phone battery lasting for 8 days when it only had 5%. And I was like, it's not quite the point of the story. And the idea of like presents, of like how big the presents are and getting one every day and that becoming the focus, that kind of stresses me out more, because I think it's something about intentionality. And I can hear also the complexity of what I'm saying and the conflict. But I then also think being a British Jew is really complicated. Our families are not like Jewish in a sense that like we're blended families. We have like loads of different families, members of our families doing different things, different expressions of their own Judaism or their own Britishness even. So actually like Christmas, Hanukkah time is great because I get to really like see some of those moments of working out what my identity is. Why does this feel okay? What's my intentionality? Why am I celebrating a day of Christmas or being together in this way?
And I would hate any, you know, Christian grandparents being denied spending Christmas Day with their grandchildren because, you know, their child had converted and you know, we're not allowed to celebrate this. I absolutely think there's part of that, you know, Debbie's nice analogy about you're allowed to go and celebrate with somebody else for their birthday. You can bring the joy to them. It's about how much we kind of take on ourselves. For me, it feels that there's always that wave of the Jewish over-entitled, like, you know, surely my child can't miss out. One of my husband Johnny's colleagues was talking to him once at work and was saying, you know, said, so what are you buying your son for Christmas? And Johnny said, oh, we actually don't do Christmas presents. We don't do Christmas at all. We're Jewish. And these words are, is that not neglect? Is that not like child abuse, not to give your child Christmas presents? Now, like,
my son would say yes.
Yeah. But there's that thing of like, I actually think there's some Jewish parents that think like, you know, that there's that sort of, well, if every child in the country is talking about their Christmas presents, how can my child miss out? You know, my child doesn't feel that they're missing out, I don't think.
They have bagels.
Exactly. But also, we do Hanukkah presents. And I know that we wouldn't do Hanukkah presents to the same extent if we were in Israel, where we weren't up against the commercialization of Christmas kind of in our faces all the time, that Hanukkah wasn't being set up against anything else. So I do fall into that trap, absolutely, of allowing Hanukkah to have become a kind of compensation. But I'd prefer Hanukkah to be the compensation than just like, of course, Dolly, let's give you Christmas presents in case you feel you've missed out.
But I do also think that we can challenge the over-commercialization of Hanukkah. Like, we don't have to say Hanukkah is going to be all presents because we need to compete with Christmas. So
say
we
us as we sit in our matching Hanukkah jumpers.
Yes. But in terms of particularly like the gift giving and so for the last few years, my approach has been to theme the nights differently. So one night will be book night and one night will be pajama night because everyone needs new pajamas every now and then. One night is grandparents' night. We won't give them a present when the grandparents are coming over. One night when we're not in a pandemic, we'll throw a party for friends and that's the celebration. We don't have presents that night. One night we will go to the supermarket and do a shop for the food bank and give as our Hanukkah celebration. And the kids actually ask what night's that going to be now, which makes me so happy. And, you know, it's not 8 nights of endless gifts because they've got plenty of stuff and so much of it will just become part of the problem of driving all the world's issues of climate change and, you know, waste that doesn't go anywhere. Although, you know, I am someone who loves finding presents for people, so it does take self-restraint sometimes when
I'm so impressed
with
that 8-day program of festival. I feel very
underprogrammed. Are you underprogrammed?
I definitely underprogram, and yeah, we'll definitely take some of that on board though for doing it. It also sounds exhausting, which I guess also mirrors, you know, what everyone says about Christmas and, you know, having to prepare everything. It's like, okay, 8 days, 8-day program is quite impressive. I like that.
We try. So it has really, today has just got me so in the mood for the light and joy of Hanukkah, Christmas. However early it is. I am excited about Hanukkah starting on Sunday night when we're going to light our first candles. We would love to hear from you, our listener. You can let us know what you are dedicating yourself to this week or over Hanukkah, or maybe something about how you are bringing light into your lives, or what you're doing to celebrate this year. You can get in touch with us at media@rjuk.org or at Reform Movement on Twitter. We always love hearing from you and letting us know what you think. We wish you a very happy Hanukkah from all of us at Rabbiting On and all of us at the Movement for Reform Judaism. And we will see you with all the light and oil sitting in our bodies in a couple of weeks' time.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody, and sorry for being the Grinch that stole Christmas.
That was fun.